Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher, back in the saddle of The Cynic Weekly for the first time in a very, very long time, probably since it was the 90 Minute Cynic podcast, the weekly podcast. Louis doing a great job, but Louis got the week off, so I will step in. It's great to have such a great panel because we do have a lot to talk about. There's been a lot of change and a lot of movement over the last, well, day, if nothing else, regarding Celtic. So without further ado, as always on The Cynic Weekly, right-hand man of any host, it's Chris Sormani. Hello, Chris.
Thank you, Chris, for that wonderful introduction there. Delighted to be here as ever. How are you?
I'm good, Chris. I'm feeling a little bit more positive, but that is coming from negative 20, so I'm only negative 18 now, so, but still more positive than I was. But thanks for asking, Chris. That doesn't often happen. People don't ask me how I am, so...
I care.
Clearly. And now you've put pressure on Ruth and Frankie to ask me how I am, so so that's fun. Ruth Boyle is here also. Hello, Ruth, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, Harry. How are you?
Very good. Frankie Mitchell, how are you?
I'm all right. It would just be awkward if I ask you now, so.
That's disappointing, Frankie. I set you up for that, to be honest. I set it up for my own ego, I'll be honest. Now, listen, terrific panel. Chris Sormani, Ruth Boyle, Frankie Mitchell. I don't know if we could have handpicked a better panel. We do have lots to talk about, so let's get on with it. Celtic have signed Joe Hart. Celtic have signed James McCarthy. Celtic have, in one day, signed and made it known they've signed two players. Let's deal with them each individually because obviously both of them come with a lot of baggage. A lot of baggage regarding age, regarding injuries, and regarding recent form. But let's get your general thoughts on... We'll start with Joe Hart. We're going to start with Chris Sormani. What's your general thoughts on Joe Hart? Just go for it.
Joe Hart's a guy who I've never been a massive fan on, if I'm being perfectly honest. It's a bit of a punt, but I think the goalkeeping situation at Celtic is such that we really did need to sign a goalkeeper. Now, in the best place terms, you know, we would have scouted somebody, we would have got a young up-and-comer or somebody else who's better with playing the ball at their feet, more likely to fit into what Postecoglou's perceived style is. But this is Celtic right now. We haven't done those things. We wasted months and months and months chasing Eddie Howe. Then we appointed Postecoglou in the space of days after that. So I think there's a general acceptance that there's a malaise and there's kind of chaos surrounding the club. What I'm saying about Hart is exactly what I said about Craig Gordon when he signed. In fact, I was probably more negative about signing Craig Gordon than I would be about Joe Hart. My gut says that Hart will be better than what we've got, but will show himself up over the course of the season. So the fact that he's better than what we've got, I suppose I'm okay with it. There's a potential he might be very good, but generally speaking, he's not a guy who I would have went for.
Before I bring Ruth in, are you coming around to him a little bit? Like, I found myself coming around to him a little bit over the last 24 hours because he's got a little bit of pedigree. To Manny.
Sorry, I thought you were...
No, just I wanted you to finish. I want to finish that with you.
Sorry, I'm on this podcast every week and my professionalism is just non-existent right now. Apologise. Am I coming round to him? I'm coming round to the possibility that he might be good. I think for both players, I think there's potential that we're picking up people who are down in their luck and we can turn them around. We're a football club who've done that in the past for certain players. But Hart, there's something about Hart that just makes me think... I just wouldn't have went for it. See, because of his past, and maybe this is, you know, just where he was and how highly rated he was by the English press at one point, and we know that he was never quite as good as they made him out to be. There's just something that makes me think, I think we could have done something else other than Joe Hart. I don't know. I didn't think I was going to be so negative about Joe Hart, but when I'm talking about him, I seem that way. I'm going to be far more positive about the other signing, but there's just something about Hart that makes me think this probably won't work. I don't know. I might come to regret that, but that's the way I feel at the moment.
I hope you come to regret it. I hope you.
No, of course.
I hope you get embarrassed, to be honest. Ruth Boyle, talk me through your thoughts on Joe Hart.
I think we discussed this on the Weekend Update when it was still a hypothetical. And I'd love to say that my opinion has changed and that I'm slowly coming around to it, but I'm really not enthusiastic about Hart. And I think if he does come good and it works out, it's going to be as a result of pure chance. It's not going to be because like Celtic have looked at him and thought that he's going to fit into that system. It will just be pure luck. And I think, again, just highlights issues with the processes that are going on at Celtic, because we've obviously been rumoured with both of these players in the past, one of the players for like a prolonged period of time, and it would be highly coincidental for a new manager to come in who isn't familiar with the league and everything and still have the same two transfer targets. I'm worried about Joe Hart both from a patter perspective and from a playing perspective, and I just don't see how he's the best option that we possibly could get. And I know that he's played in the Premier League, but I think the Shane Duffy example is a very strong one, that just because someone has been successful to a certain degree within the Premier League does not mean that they're going to be a good fit for us. It doesn't mean that that pedigree is going to translate into them being a good player for us or being able to strengthen the team. And I think, Gal, my final point, you were talking on the reaction to the Hearts game about Craig Gordon and how there's a lot of discussion now about how we should never have let him go. And, you know, you said that he's an improvement on what we have, but that's not what our transfer policy should be. And I think that applies to Joe Hart as well. Like, he's maybe an improvement on what we have because what we have isn't very good, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he is the keeper for us and that he should be our number one target. So I'm disappointed in it. I wasn't enthusiastic when it came up last transfer window, so I'm certainly not enthusiastic about it months down the line.
Frankie, anything?
I feel conflicted about it. I think it's difficult. So, I mean, when you look at the Cynic analysis guys put out a really valuable thread covering, you know, his past couple of seasons, looking into his stats. Some of it was quite worrying, but I feel it's difficult to form an opinion on him, because in the past 5 years he's had, I think, one season when he's broke 20 appearances when he was out at Torino on loan. And I just feel like with regards to transfers in general, I've been stuck in this place where I've accepted this season as a transition season, and I knew we wouldn't get the quality long-term signings we needed all in one window. It was never going to be possible. But I feel that Joe Hart to me seems more like he should be a stopgap signing as opposed to a long-term solution. And I've been mulling it over, and, you know, stylistically I'm more concerned about whether he's the right fit for Angie's playing style, as you have mentioned. And it's not just about his goalkeeping skills, it's about, you know, what impact can he impart on our defence, how can he organise them, how well can he work with them. Like, we've currently not getting close to a decent enough defence for him to come in and form a really solid unit with. So that's like a wider problem, which isn't his fault, but it matters. And, you know, like, I get the viewpoint. I think he is better than what we've got currently, but not better enough for me to be enthused about it. And I'd love for him to come in and like show me up for being a big naysayer. But like, it's a hell of a situation for a low-end confidence goalkeeper to come in looking to resurrect his reputation. And I listened to an interview that he did with BBC Sport last year when he was a free agent at the time, like just before Spurs picked him up. And I just thought it was a shame. Like, I mean, he said he was still really, he's like, I'm dead sure of myself and my abilities, but he said, I just need someone to believe in me and I'll repay that faith. And I just, it's so extraordinary the come down he's had from the level he once was. And that's got to be so difficult for him to reconcile in his head. So he does have baggage now that maybe we could do without. But as I say, I hope that he proves me wrong in being sceptical.
Chris, you want to come in?
I think Frankie's touched on a good point about him. There's almost like a redemption story to be had here for Hart. And I think, you know, taking away the analysis part of it. Frankie also made a good point about the sample, and I think they touched on the sample size in terms of when they were speaking about that. I don't think you can really have take much of what Hart's done in the last couple of seasons because he's not played that much. But see, as a football club, I mean, there's players who've came here and thrived because of the support. It looks as if we're going to be back in the stadium in full numbers very, very soon. This is the sort of place where people can be reborn. I mean, there's guys like Samaras who perhaps came to England with a huge reputation. It didn't work out. He came here, he fell in love with the club, and he thrived. Not always, but he thrived overall, I would say. We've got this atmosphere where, see if Joe Hart performs, he'll be adored. He'll be absolutely adored. Forster thrived in that atmosphere with us as well. Now, this is us taking away the nuts and bolts of what he's done over the last few years and what's happened, though. But see, when he's saying something like that, see if that's true. See if he says, I just need a chance, and it's almost like I just want to be loved. So you perform for us, you're going to be. And that's maybe putting emotion into it as opposed to thinking straight with the head. But definitely we're a football club that can redeem players. And I would love nothing more than for us to do that with Joe Hart. So, I think he is going to be better than what we've got. So that's good. I've got my concerns, but let's do it. Let's go, Joe.
I was reading I read a book a couple of years ago. Yes, I read a book.
Was that a comic?
No, I mean, it was a book, but it was in comic form. They count. It was basically called the title of the book's called, like, Why England Lose, and it talks about the psychology of sport, and specifically, it talked essentially how 1966 became a bit of an albatross around the England national team's back, around their neck, and if they hadn't won in 96, there's a good chance they would have won in years later. And they talked about that, and it was really interesting. And one of the things they talked about was they talked about players, and they talked about the kind of development of players, but they also talked about the redemption of players. And there was a lot of stories about players that were on the footballing scrap heap that really turned their life around, turned their career around. Players who were written off. Even a guy like, okay, calm down when I say this, but Ronnie Simpson was a guy who was written off. Jockstein brought him in pretty much as the backup, and he goes on to be the 1967 European Cup winning goalkeeper. That's an extreme example because he's a legend of our football club. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Joe Hart. What I'm saying is the analysis guys have done a great job. At Cynic Analysis is great. Follow it for all of these reports and updates on these players. They'll look at the nuts and bolts of it, and we'll talk about it from a fan perspective. I think there's a redemption story here, and I think I'm maybe being a little bit emotional, but I think we kind of have to get on board now, because we'll talk about the protest, we'll talk about the board, we'll talk about how angry we are, and we'll talk about what we can do, but we also kind of need to get behind the team as well. And you can do both. There's absolutely time to do both. Ruth Boyle, James... Before I finish, bring Ruth in. Joe Hart has signed a 3-year deal. So he's our player. He's 3 years. I imagine he would have been told, you're coming in as number one. So, if nothing else, at least this ticks off that problem of who's going to start in goals. Is it going to be Barkas? Is it going to be Bain? It's going to be Hart, and that's it. So, we can almost rest easy on that fact. Ruth Boyle, James McCarthy has signed a 4-year deal with Celtic. Announced today, your thoughts?
No, I'm Mrs. Negative Nelly today, but... there's a big question mark over whether McCarthy will be good at Celtic. There's a possibility, and you know what? He could actually come and be very good and successful, and I will welcome that and be very happy. But I think it's, again, about the process of it and whether he's a target that Ange Postecoglou would have prioritised, or whether it's someone that was just kind of on the radar and we've gone for as a result of the kind of familiarity point. Looking at the stats again, and I think, you know, Frankie's made the point that the stats don't apply to everything. It might still be another redemption tale, but like, it's concerning in terms of what we'd be expecting him to do in that position and whether he's capable of doing it. There's like some concerns in the stat report that Aidan and Christian and Stephen have done about whether he's going to fit into the system. And it could be a Shane Duffy part two, you know, and like Shane Duffy's really scarred all of my Premier League signings now. But I'd say I'm probably more enthusiastic about McCarthy than Hart, because I think there's a possibility that he could be good. But again, just concerned about the timing of it in terms of his age, his injuries, and also the kind of length of deal that we've given him as well. But I am open-minded enough that I will be enthusiastic if it works out.
I'm open-minded enough that I'll like it if he's good.
If he's good, I will be happy.
My God, I mean, that's... I love that.
I'm
that's
putting myself on the line there.
That's a really great line. Frankie, we'll come to you in a minute, Sormani. Frankie, what's your kind of thoughts and your process on James McCarthy?
I largely agree with what Ruth said. I do think it would be undeniable to say that he wouldn't bolster the squad in terms of his experience, which is never a bad thing, I would say. I can't overlook his injury record and the fact that this is something we've been linked for. This is someone we've been linked for many years ago. And I want signings that our actual manager now wants and doesn't have to shoehorn into his system. And I just actually thought he was older than 30. I was being really judgmental. I thought he was about 33 or something. He's 30. I think, you know, we're going to need a lot of energy from him that I'm not sure he'll be able to give. And the 4-year deal freaks me out quite a bit. I'm sort of, these two transfers, looking at them just as the transfers, regardless of whether they go on to be successful and people think the club are entirely justified in going ahead with them, right now these are not signings that indicate to me that we're trying to do things differently than we have done before.
That's true.
And we were told that we wanted to try and replicate the models of modern European clubs. Like, that's what we were told not that long ago. Obviously these things take time, and there's not been enough time to have a total overhaul or anything, but, you know, these signings are happening now and we're locked in for 3-4 years, and these are not the signings that modern progressive European clubs make, going after sort of deadwood from a better league. And you know, he may go on to be really good. It's just the type of signing. I'm not, it feels like we're still stuck where we were in the past.
That, you know, good points, and I think we'll come back to that. So yeah, that good point on that, Frankie. Sormani, you're a little bit more positive on the signing, maybe?
I think I agree with Frankie overall in terms of the way the club are, but I would also think Postecoglou's is a signing. You know, he was signed by us because of what happened with Howe. Now, so I think that's where the club are. We're not a modern progressive club. We don't have a significant scouting policy. We don't have a progressive outlook. We don't have a director of football. You know, Postecoglou might be that, but he was hired by chance. Nobody's going to tell me any different, you know. So part of where we are just now is bolstering the squad. Signings like that, maybe I'm being biased, right, but I've always been a huge James McCarthy fan. I think McCarthy, his peak, see when he was linked, when he was at Everton, and he was linked to going to Arsenal for 30, 40 million pounds. I thought James McCarthy was an excellent footballer then.
Yeah.
Now, he's had persistent hamstring injuries, and he had the leg break, which everybody knows about, horrible injury. Again, see, you know, they've set him back, and that's maybe hampered his overall progress. I'm not going to talk about his last 2 years at Crystal Palace because he was playing under Roy Hodgson, and I think Christian would probably agree with me on that one as well. Couldn't be a worse manager for somebody to play under. McCarthy for me, I'm not going to rule out the injury problems, but if you can get McCarthy fit, he, for me, would significantly improve that midfield. It would benefit guys like Callum McGregor to a huge degree. I think that position is key for us. I was worried that we were going to go into this season with McGregor, with Sorrow and Turnbull as our midfield three, which I think is nowhere near good enough. Now, would I have liked to have maybe got somebody younger, you know, who's going to be able to play that position for longer? Well, possibly, yes. But for me, I've just got a feeling that McCarthy really, really could show that midfield up. I don't think we can ignore the fact he gets it. He really, really wants to play for Celtic. He's been a Celtic fan his whole life. He's talked about that. You know, we know what the connection he's got to the club. see if he can stay fit. And he's played more games over the last couple of seasons than I've thought, although it's been a bit stop-start, which has probably hindered his progress and his form over the last 2 years. See if we can get him. And we've got a guy like Forrest who's been like that for years as well. If we can get him to play a run of games, I genuinely think he could make a huge difference to that midfield. Genuinely. Out of the two of them, I'm pretty excited about McCarthy. I really am. I just think he's got that bit of steel in the middle as well. He's not afraid to tackle. You know, he's kind of tough in the tackle. We've talked about our midfield being overrun by them in the last few years. Guys like McCarthy, I think, and I don't want to be kind of reductive and just talk about being hard in the middle of the park. I don't just mean that. He's a hard player when he needs to be, but he's also an excellent football player.
Yeah.
So there is part of me thinks McCarthy could be a really, really good signing for us. Frankie's points about what we want the club to be, I agree with them, but we're not just now. And I think these signings are a wee bit out of necessity because of what happened with Howe and Postecoglou coming in. So as much as I agree with that, I think there's a need just now. And I think signing McCarthy might be huge for us. Positive about that one, Chris.
Positivity. What I would say about James McCarthy is, and again, caveats, if he stays fit, I think he'll be the modern day Barry Robson. I think he's a better footballer than Barry Robson.
Much better.
Oh, no. In terms of the impact he had, right? So James McCarthy has played at the highest level. James McCarthy, when he was at Everton, you know, really should have went on to, you know, a top five club in England. And then obviously he had his leg break and that really shattered him. But the impact that Barry Robson had when he came into Celtic, where he had a really good left foot on him and he was really, really hard and he just brought something. There's potential that James McCarthy could do that for us. He's a better footballer all round than Sorrow, but by some distance. I think he's going to bring out the best in Callum McGregor. I think he's going to ease the pressure on Callum McGregor. Ruth keeps bringing up Shane Duffy for obvious reasons, and I completely understand that. This guy, for me, is absolutely not in that bracket. But again, caveats, because, you know, it takes one bad hamstring pull for him to be out for 4 months. You know, this isn't perfect. Celtic are never going to be able to go and buy a 24-year-old from the Premier League. A 30-year-old from the Premier League with experience and someone who has a bit of a history with injuries, you know, that's probably our market, right? And I know that's not fun to hear and I know that's not ideal, but that experience that he has, I think, could shift a lot of things in our favour. Now, what you have to do with that is you have to have runners off him. Cal McGregor's definitely a runner. What that then adds is, who's the other one? Is it Ryan Christie? Or is it David Turnbull? Does Christie go? If Christie does go, I don't think Turnbull. So McCarthy's not going to be as mobile as McGregor, of course. But he's going to link up play. He's going to break things up. He's going to be a destroyer. But he will come out with the ball. I think that McCarthy is far more of an Ange player than people are really willing to give him credit for. And I think he will fit into that system far better than people will give him credit for. Frankie's points are 100% right in terms of, is this the guy that should be targeted straight away if we are going up levels? Maybe not. But this is where we are, Frankie. And this is where we are, Ruth. And this is where we are, Chris. And do you know what? I think this guy could... Oh, I'm hyping myself up on purpose. You know, I'm just trying to get a bit of love back. But yeah, I mean, McCarthy and Hart, it's two players that bring a lot of experience. And, you know, Ruth, what was your... I don't want to jump too far ahead, but experience was missing on Saturday against Hearts, don't you think?
See, before Ruth comes in there, you didn't convince her. I was looking at Ruth's face there to see if she would crack and go, you know what? You have convinced me. She doesn't. She's not. Yeah. She's like that. This is piss you're talking, gal.
Yeah.
Piss you're talking, Sir Manny.
But yeah. Anyway, what do you call it? Frankie's just WhatsApp me to say any more of that pissing, I'm off. So that's absolutely fine.
Don't you know, I want to eat that up with a spoon and I want to like see that we've done a double signing and be nothing but enthusiastic and thinking about how those players are going to fit in. But it is just that point about the process and about what it indicates around where the club is in terms of their journey to being a modern football club. And like, I think because we've done so much work, like even as the cynic, like in the vision pod and everything, and thinking about what you want Celtic to look like, and this is just a very blatant example of how far away we are from that. And I guess that's at the forefront of my mind.
What did you think of Hearts, the Hearts game, Ruth?
I was really disappointed, particularly because we'd obviously just done the Weekend Update gal and I'd said that I thought we were going to beat Hearts and we'd go and not drop any points before Rangers. So it was a bit of a wake-up call on that. It was disappointing because I thought that the Michelin game and Hearts had to be taken as very separate entities, and that just because we'd lost that Michelin game didn't mean we were going to lose the Hearts game, and was really trying to be positive and enthusiastic about it. But I think it highlighted that, I think Lorenzo said it on the reaction, that we'd been very focused on our defensive fragilities and maybe less focused on some of the issues that existed in the wider team. And I think that game on Saturday was, again, a big wake-up call in terms of just how much work there is to do in terms of that squad and the squad depth as well. And again, looking to that bench and not really having options and things. There were some like silver linings in terms of, I think Starfield, like, he obviously didn't have the greatest game, but he was there for one day with the squad beforehand. And I think like just having him in is going to be better. And also just getting to see Furuhashi's debut was good as well. But no, it was a big kind of wake up in terms of where we actually are compared to where we want to be. So it was definitely disappointing.
Frankie, obviously we lost the game. Hearts won 2-1 with a goal really late on. What worried you? What worried you most? Was it our defensive frailties, or was it our the fact that we weren't very clinical in front of goal? Where would you like us to improve more?
It was everything.
yeah, pretty much.
See, I don't know. I don't know what a winnable fixture for Celtic is anymore, and I don't know how to deal with that in my head. Hearts didn't blow us away, they didn't outsmart us, and there was no point where I felt like we weren't, to an extent, in control of the game. But it's giving the ball away in silly places, it's poor positional discipline. For their first goal, it's been covered already that Starfelt was shown up pretty badly there, and when you look at the replay as well, like Turnbull was like hanging back, sort of meandering about, which let them overload that side without any pressure on them, and it's just a free hit. And it's like, how many times last season did we lose goals because of being too slack? And I something needs to get done about Ralston. Like this has been said many times before, it's not his fault that he's not good enough. Every player has a ceiling. Whether that's in terms of ability or limitations to their football intelligence, I guess, and his is well below what we need to expect from him. But he's been played out of necessity, and it's bad. I know he scored, and it was a great finish and a great goal, but I just think that the defence is deeply concerning if we are to continue adjusting to Ange's system. It's not pacey enough, it's not flexible enough, and I won't make any sweeping judgments about Starfelt based on his one performance, because, you know, he had barely spent any meaningful amount of time, as you said, training with the team. But he had a few sort of moments of fragility, and I would like to hope that's just nerves and settling into the game, and hopefully he can grow from it. But we can't keep giving our opposition so many opportunities to exploit us. It was really, I felt really disheartened. At full time, it really ruined my entire Sunday.
Yeah,
which I hate that it dictates a whole day's mood, but that's caring, I guess.
Yeah, there's on Starfelt, and I'll bring you in a second, Chris. But you see, with defenders, what I've found in my experience is defenders either start really well and continue, and it's an elevation really high up, or they start really well and they drop off, or they start poorly and they go. I'm just naming four different scenarios of the same thing, I've just realised.
Yeah, there's a good chance he'll continue.
I've just basically said he'll start good and be good, or he'll start good and be rubbish, or he'll start rubbish and be good. And that's not a lot. It's not a lot of good insight. Hopefully he's good. Chris, somebody, what did you make of the Hearts game?
Similar to Frankie, the ending and the result, pretty much. I mean, you'd think I was used to it after last season.
Aye,
but when that goal went in, I just thought, fucking hell, man. So it infuriated me, because it was as predictable as anything. You know, there was hallmarks of last season. You know, a lot of possession, not being clinical when we got the chances. All that was there, but what was also there was the naivety and the inability to cope with any sort of pace up against us or any sort of tempo. For the first 10, 15 minutes, Hearts started at a high tempo. Last season, any time a team did that to us, we looked all at sea. And of course, they did it again and we conceded. Starfelt, yeah, I mean, you can point the finger at Starfelt, but I thought he actually settled down after that and I thought he's quite comfortable in the ball. For me, I just wiped that out. I'm not going to judge him on the basis of that one training session, came straight in. And I think, you know, when you bookend, you know, the goals at either side of the game, I thought Starfelt was fine. Some players in there, you know, are beginning to really disappoint me. Turnbull is a guy who I think came in, made a wee bit of a difference last season and has been coasting in that. He hasn't improved in a Celtic strip for me. He takes too many touches to turn on the ball. And that goes back to the point I made earlier on, that I was concerned that we would think that Sorrow, Turnbull and McGregor would be good enough in the middle of the park. Turnbull and Sorrow, both for me, I don't know if they're good enough to start for us. I'll be happy if they were contributing or coming into games, but I think we need more in there. Maybe that's part of the reason why I'm so pleased about the McCarthy signing. But a lot of the time, a lot of the pressure we get is when they're not functioning, when they're misfiring in that central midfield, I think it affects all other areas of the pitch.
Yeah.
And that genuinely, for me, Turnbull is starting to become really quite disappointing, given what we know he's capable of, given some of the goals he scored for us and what we've seen him do for Motherwell. He needs to step up. Now, we're at a club that's not firing on all cylinders. Postecoglou's only been there for, what, 6-7 weeks? Whatever. I'm not writing the guy off, but right now, do I think he's good enough to start for us on a week-to-week basis? No. And I would have expected him to deliver more. Overall, the game for me just was a bit of a continuation of last season, and I think that's what made it frustrating, because we're waiting for that change. We're waiting for that great leap forwards, and we don't have it yet. There's some people saying that they've seen signs of what Postecoglou is trying to do. I would say that's true to an extent, but they're not being imprinted on the team just now, and that's partly that it doesn't have the personnel. But at the same time, I'm thinking, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're still not very good.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'll bring Ruth Boyle in a second, but, you know, the idea that any manager could go to Tynecastle with Taylor and Ralston at fullback, with Nir Bitton at centre half, and with a misfiring David Turnbull, you know, it really is, and it's, you know, you need to give this guy the tools to do his job right, because if you don't, you know, you're not going to tighten a screw with a hammer. Now, I made that up off the top of my head. We'll just leave it, right? We'll just, if the listeners like it, at the Cynic. Ruth, see, regarding Turnbull though, would you take him out the firing line just now? Would you take him out and maybe try and work with him? Because it isn't working, is it, really?
No, and I think I didn't really make any... do you know what? Your hammer thing has thrown me off entirely. I've forgotten how to use any words now. It wasn't a secret that I was a big fan of Turnbull last season and that I think he's a very good player, but like, you have to be perfectly honest and say that he's absolutely not fitting into the side at the minute. And I think we all raised concerns last season in terms of his work off the ball and his pace and his fitness. And that's really come to the fore in the very few games that we've played this season so far. I think you're right. I don't think it means that he's necessarily written off and he doesn't have a role to play in this side, but I do think like he's got a lot of work to do and a lot of development still. And I think there's a point about how when he came to Celtic last season, it was never the expectation that he would have been playing every game. And that's what he had to do in the second half of last season because everything was a complete shit show. And that maybe has hampered his development to some extent as well, because he wasn't getting that concentrated time to work on his game. He was just being thrown in to play every single match. And I think if we'd been realistic last season, we thought he would maybe be coming in as an option off the bench or playing the odd game. And that's maybe where we are with him this season, when hopefully we'll have more options. So I do think it's a good idea to maybe take him out of the firing line, because we can see how quickly that players become scapegoats in a situation when the fans are agitated, and we're certainly agitated at the minute. So I think it's about expectations with Turnbull, and maybe part of that is kind of taking him out for a period of time.
Frankie, Chris Armani mentioned that it felt like a continuation of last season. That felt the same with the referees as well. What's your thoughts on the disallowed goal and Andy Halliday's tackle on Callum McGregor?
It was indicative of the standard of refereeing in Scotland, which is very poor. And none of it was surprising to me. He had a very bad game. Halliday should have been booked. Goal should have stood. I was angry about it at the time, rewatching it back on Sports Scene as well and hearing the chat about it and everything. And not that I've stopped caring about it now, but, you know, the referee wasn't the reason that we lost the game. It doesn't mean that it doesn't matter right enough, but it's just a shame that it's such a, none of it surprises me at all. Just the standard of refereeing here is very bad, and that was a perfect example of a sort of disaster class and, you know, getting decisions wrong.
Yeah. So Manny, what did you make of the tackle on the disallowed goal?
The disallowed goal was clearly onside, so, you know, it wasn't as if it was that tight. See, in real time when you seen it, I thought, oh, well, that's onside. So that was a really poor decision. The tackle from Halliday was absolutely disgusting. But the one thing I'm going to talk about, and I know Alan Edgar's been saying this for a long time, is why do we just accept it? See, when McGregor was scythed down, he got up and he kind of chatted back to the referee and, you know, basically told him it was a poor tackle. Why don't you have six or seven players around the referee screaming it?
Yeah. I think Joe Hart will go mental, and I think James McCarthy will go mental. We need more characters.
We need to bring that to the game. Now, Strachan's side were really, you know, famous for doing that. They were all on top of the referee and screaming in his face. They do it and it influences the referee. Now, see, if you just lie down and take these things, they're going to happen again and again. You want to be in a position where the referee feels the pressure if he makes a decision against us. To not book Halliday for that tackle was nothing short of disgusting. He knew what he was doing. He could have seriously injured McGregor, and we're now in this position whereby we're talking about the referees, you know, the decisions he made. We need to up the ante on the pitch when it comes to them.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a referee that's pals with Andy Halliday and goes on podcasts with him, and, you know, it's all very unprofessional, and it should, you know, if the shoe was in the other foot, I think there would be, you know, a bit of an outrage about it. So it's Scottish football in a nutshell for me. And it's disappointing, and it'll continue. And Frankie's right in that we should be winning these games anyway. I mean, we should still be, you know, taking it to the SFA in the morning. Don't get me wrong about that. But we should also just be winning the games, because we need to be better overall.
I think building a siege mentality is important in terms of trying to dig yourselves out of a bit of a hole. Because, see, when you do that and you're kind of clawing for everything, you can, that builds through the team. But see, if you seem passive and you're lying down to it, that's the problem. See, if you're going nuts about that and you feel there's been a disservice, I think that can affect how the team plays and goes forward. So should we have won that game? Should we be winning those games out of sight? Yeah, but sometimes I think we're too easy to let them away when the tackle of McGregor I'm specifically talking about here. We should be up in their face.
Yeah, I could completely agree. You go back to the Martin O'Neill teams, you know, tackles on, you know, Chris Sutton used to be right in amongst it. Alan Thompson and all that. And I know there'll be people who will say, well, that is part of the game. That is how you get, it's those small advantages, and we need every advantage we can get. He's also baldy. So... I don't know what that came
from.
I know, I know. I'm just it's just outwardly projecting. So bad.
Sir Manny's facial expression there is going to keep me going for a long time.
So obviously we didn't go off to the start we wanted from a league perspective. There was a lot of there was a lot to pick over. There was some flashpoints, you know, there was some small passages of play that worked. Starfelt did come into it a little bit. We conceded a really Celtic-y goal where the ball was just put into an area, the keeper doesn't know what to do, and no one attacks the ball at all. This brings into I want to get the three of you guys' opinion on this. So on Twitter today, when McCarthy and Hart was confirmed, I put out a tweet, and it basically what it was the team we could play potentially against Dundee, and it was on the proviso that Buta would sign as right back. So the team was Hart and goals, Buta at right back, Bitton, Starfield, and Taylor, McCarthy, with McGregor and Christie. And then up front we had Furuhashi, Edward, and I went with James Forrest. I put that up and I said, this is a potential team. People's biggest point was Welsh for Bitton. And straight off the bat, Ruth is nodding along. The reason I put Bitton in there is because Bitton started ahead of Welsh in the opening league game of the season. So I want to come to you, and I'll start with yourself, Ruth. Is Ange going to pick Bitton for his passing over Welsh's experience of defending? Who do you think he's going to go with if they were both fit?
I think you're right that it seems like it will be Bitton. That was one of the question marks for me at the Hearts game. I think like it's obviously too soon to like really criticise Ange for anything substantial, particularly when the squad is how it is. But that decision to drop Welsh, I thought was maybe a bit harsh on him, to be honest. I don't think he'd really done anything wrong that would warrant him being dropped. I think like Sir Manny and I were on many reactions last season where we were discussing the merits of Bitton and had pretty much concluded that there was no place for him in our back four ever again. Then for him to be sent off on the in the Michelin game really finalised that for me. I would go with Welsh over Bitton, but obviously I am not Celtic manager, and I think that you're right that probably Ange will stick with Bitton in that position.
Frankie, you've been quite a kind of, you're a big fan of Ange in terms of, you know, what he's going to bring to the club and where he could be. Do you think it's a case of, he looks at the squad and he thinks these are the attributes I need from my centre halves, and I'd rather someone who can pass really well out of defence than someone who's going to defend. Maybe that's what Starfield's for. What's your kind of take on it? Who do you think Ange is going to pick?
I agree in that Ange probably would rather pick Bitton, as he does like his defenders to be more fluid. I think it would make sense from that perspective. Being honest, I just don't really like Bitton that much. I'm clouded. My opinion's clouded that way. And I was disappointed that Welsh didn't start the other day. But Ange picks the players who he thinks fit his style more. And it would make total sense from that respect. I just don't really like Bitton that much.
So Manny, what's your take? Is it a case of we just need another centre-half and then Bitton and Welsh will both be benched?
Well, I would hope so. I would hope we would get another centre-half in. I think there's a good possibility that Ange is picking him because of, you know, his perceived ability with the ball at his feet. But like Frankie, I just don't like him. He's a shite defender.
Yeah.
He's, you know, people call him he's a converted midfielder and that. He is a converted midfielder, but he's been playing at centre-half for a long time, very poorly. So him being there infuriates me. I would much rather somebody like Welsh was there, even though I'm not convinced by him either, than Bitton. For me, Bitton is in the same bracket as the likes of Lee Griffiths and Tom Rodgick in terms of players that I don't want to see take the part for Celtic ever again. I don't see what he brings. I wouldn't move him back into midfield. He's done. He's had his time at the club. Bye-bye. And I also hate how Ange calls him Nero.
Wow.
Just going to put that out there.
Just
as well.
Just an extra thing to pile on.
I'm not a big fan of the Barkey and the Nero.
Oh, I'm
you
a
know.
Big fan of the Barkey. Yes, no. Barkey. That's the only reason I want to keep Barkas, just for yes, Barkey.
I'm not having it. I don't like putting random letters on the end of names. And well, I suppose they dropped a couple when they Barkas. You know what I mean? You get my point.
I really don't. I'll be honest. It seems like you just don't like the nickname. I mean, it seems that simple. Regarding Lee Griffiths, Dave Flanagan wrote a fantastic article for The Cynic. As part of our subscription service, we're releasing about 50 podcasts a month, sometimes more. We're releasing articles. Our articles are going to go right up in terms of quantity and quality. Dave's article kind of hit the nail on the head for everyone, I think. So if you are a subscriber, listen to that. If you're not a subscriber, maybe give it a month, check it out. We've got lots on offer and we're doing some really good stuff and everyone's contributing. It's fantastic. Obviously, we were knocked out by Midtjylland. Chris, what's the PSV Midtjylland score at this point? Last we heard it was 3-0 that we're getting gubbed.
3-0 last time I checked. I'll give you an update. You can maybe move to Ruth or Frankie and I'll interject.
Okay, cool. Frankie. Midtjylland was disappointing, obviously. Now have FK Jablonec. What are your thoughts on European football this season? There's an argument to say if we're not in it, then we could maybe focus on the league, but there's also an argument to say that's not Celtic. What's your take, Frankie?
The discussion on the agenda yesterday about this is good, and I've been sort of weighing up in my head, you know, maybe it would be better if we didn't have European football. Maybe it's better if we streamline the season, concentrate only on what we need to do domestically and see how it goes. And I've gone back and forth umpteen times, but the fact of the matter is no European football has a significant effect on how we operate in future, you know, with what sort of signings we can bring in moving forward, the type of players we can attract. It has an effect on maybe even the mentality of players who perhaps one of the main reasons they came here is to test themselves at that higher level. Ultimately, I don't even know how many seasons it's been now without Champions League football. It seems like it's been forever. And that in itself has had an effect on our reputation. I think if we were to have no European football at all, it really would tarnish it further. Because we are a big club and we want to keep ourselves on the bigger stage. So, I think that I would rather... I mean, we're not going to win anything in Europe. That's my thought.
How dare you?
Part of me thinks...
How dare you? That's a disgrace.
It's a hunch, but I feel like not that it would be a waste of time at all, like not at all, but given our circumstances right now, everything is so up in the air, it maybe would be ideal if we just had less games to care about. But as I say, there's a wider context to it, I think.
We had a really interesting discussion, myself, Alan Edgar and Kieran Devlin, on the agenda, which drops every Monday. It's hard, Ruth. This season is really, it's been three games and it's been really tough already. we've got the game against Jablonec on Thursday. Basically, you're looking at, even if we lose to in this tie, we go into the Conference League playoffs. So you, no matter what happens, Celtic will have 8 games in 28 days, which is a game on average every 3.5 days. New players coming in, trying to teach them the style, trying to teach them the system. It's just a really tough start for Ange, isn't it?
It is, and I think I agree with Frankie that the discussion around Europe as a distraction on the agenda was really good. It's hard because we obviously see ourselves as being like a big name in European football, and to kind of warrant that you have to be in European competition. So it's hard to kind of let go of that. And I had also gone into this season thinking of it as a transition year, thinking of it as a rebuild, but thinking that in an abstract sense and actually living through it is a very different thing. And having the patience to put up with results that don't meet your expectations is another thing entirely. So I think it's going to be difficult to kind of keep the head this year, and I'm going to try very hard. But yeah, that's an impossible start. And again, you know, I think like we have to start just looking forward, but it's very hard not to get resentful of how late the appointment was of getting a manager in. Yes. Because obviously that closed season gives you time to work on the system and to work on getting players' fitness up and people understanding what their role is going to be within a new system. And instead of having that space and mental space to do those things, you have players who now have a really compact schedule of games and are having to learn on the go. And like, to return to the Turnbull point, if there is a player that's kind of struggling to get up to speed with the system, that run of games is going to make it near impossible for you to be doing any kind of personal work or doing additional fitness work when you've got recovery and game prep is going to be really difficult. So, I mean, it's a real baptism of fire for Ange. And, you know, I saw his interview on Celtic TV today talking about how disappointing the result was at the weekend. And he said, you know, if we keep improving our football, the results will come. But that improvement of the football could have happened before we had this run of games if we'd been more organised. And I think it's just very hard not to lament that when you see what the result of it is, which is that we're obviously very ill prepared for the season ahead.
And terrified of every game we go into currently. That's I'm genuinely, yeah. genuinely pretty worried. Chris, what's your take on the European question, I guess?
We need to be a club who aims to go as far as we can in any European competition we're in. I heard this last season from some people in terms of saying it's all about the 10. And Ruth makes some valid points in terms of us building towards a style and trying to integrate into that. But it shouldn't be at the expense of trying to... You know, it might just happen that we go out of Europe anyway,
yeah.
and that's a consequence of where we are. But I can never, ever conceive of a point where I'm saying that Celtic, it would be good if we're not in Europe, because, let's be perfectly honest, the club we are is because of European competition, and your stature and our aim should always be to do that as much. Generally speaking, even if it's in the conference, let's just try and go as far as we can. We've got a lot of these games, part of that's, you know, we're not prepared for all these games. Part of that's because we were unprepared. Part of that's because of we're playing Scottish football, so you're going to need to do that anyway. But we just need to kind of do it as much as we can. We've got Jablonec on Thursday. We just need to try and go on with it. I'm hoping, you know, as much as I agree with Ruth, I think sometimes if you've got the space and you don't have the pressure to work on the system and the style, that might be better. Part of me hopes that this thick and fast run of games, we might just start to click going forward. Yeah. I'm ever hopeful that way, but is it a distraction? You know, I don't think we can ever call it a distraction, in my opinion, although it might not be a distraction that we were playing for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I get Ruth and Frankie, and to an extent myself, my point is, I get my own point. What are you talking about? Fucking hell. What an idiot. I get Ruth's point and Frankie's point about, you know, the idea that less games means more time to kind of integrate.
But no, I agree with that, yeah.
But also, by the same regard, more opportunity to play games, to play together in competitive things mean we actually might get up to speed quicker. And again, as you say, Chris, it might not be our decision in terms of, you know, should we stay in Europe? Because we've got this tie against FK Jablonec on Thursday, which is on the BBC, which is a massive throwback, which is fun and feels like 2003 again. The finals in Seville this year.
In the stars.
Stars.
Is it the Europa League, eh?
Aye, it's in Seville.
Where's the conference final?
It's like, I think it's Latvia, or it's sort of Eastern Bloc country, so...
We don't even need to worry about that.
but what I would say is, obviously, we've got Jablonec, and then, and by the way, Stephen, Aaron, and Christian have done a team talk, which, if you're a subscriber, will be dropping on Wednesday, where they break down Jablonec, and they say that they are terrible, and that even this this Celtic side, not firing on all cylinders, will beat them. They said they're really bad. So
inject that into my veins.
But obviously, on the other side, we've got AZ Alkmaar, who are
finished a point behind PSV last season.
Yeah. So, you know, conference, anyone? Anyone conference conference calls? But yeah, I just want to highlight, Ruth used the phrase, you know, we need to keep the head, right? But Chris, I'll say to you, Use Your Heed beat the Stampede.
It's an old phrase, isn't it? Remember that?
Get it? Basically, around 2002, 2003, there was an advert at Celtic Park on the big screens where the presenter, who would then go on to present Rangers TV, she used to say, use your heed, beat the Stampede, and they would encourage people to leave before half time to go to get a pie.
I have no recollection of this.
No, me neither.
Whatsoever.
Use your heed, beat the Stampede. I'll try. I think I've got an old program and it's right printed on it, so I'll print on and I'll put it on Twitter. But it stick. Whenever anyone ever says, you know, you need to use your head, you need to focus, use your heed, I'm always like, yeah, you need to beat that Stampede. Don't you worry about that? Get to the pie stall nice and early.
It's quite funny you saying that, because I do remember that being on the screen, but you know, it's one of those many things that happened at Celtic Park and you just ignored it back in the day because it was absolutely shite. And it's not as memorable as the this is the signal when you had European fans in the stadium
this
and they told them how
the
to
signal.
Exit the
signal.
I love that.
Lovely stuff. We've got these ties essentially for the next 4 weeks. On a Thursday we'll be playing some sort of tie, whether it's Europa League or conference.
See, if we beat Jablonec, do we go straight into the conference group stages?
No, we go into the playoff. Oh, no. Yes, potentially.
Surely we must. Do we?
Yeah, we do.
If we get beat off yes. Jablonec. Is that how you pronounce it? It was either that or Jablonec, but you know, I'm assuming it's not that.
It may actually be Jablonec. But if we went on Thursday, then yeah, we go into the conference group stages. I should say that. Sorry, that I should have made that clear.
Okay.
But if we get past Jablonec, then we play AZ Alkmaar four to get into the Europa League, and if we don't get into the Europa League, we drop into the conference group stages. Sorry, okay. Yes, I should make that clear. Lots of hard games coming up. I just kind of want to finish on the Dundee game. There's a big protest planned for it. Ruth Boyle, what's your thoughts? Did you have it? Were you lucky enough to get a ticket in the ballot?
No, I'm still 0 from 4. I'll never be back. I'm to terms with that.
You're someone who jumps to like the worst case scenario ever, don't you? Like every single time.
Yeah,
like...
I catastrophize. Love so it. Yeah, I actually went on to check that I was definitely in the ballot, and I am. I'm just not being pulled out of it yet. No, so I didn't get a ticket. Before the game was moved on the Saturday, I was planning on still going down to the protest, but I can't make it on the Sunday, so I won't be able to attend. But no, I think it's a good idea to say, like, make sure that the fans' voices are heard early doors. We saw last season that we are kind of speaking into a vacuum when we're talking on Twitter, and you can think that the board are listening to your opinions, but they're absolutely not. So I think that it's a good idea for people to actually get down there. And I think we talked on the Weekend Update as well, Gal, about like how it's going to be a wake-up call for some of those board members who've never really met the wrath of the support before. So I think that's a positive thing. And I think for fans themselves, it will feel positive to be back among other people who are like-minded and to understand that you're kind of part of something bigger, because it's been really isolating to be angry in your house on your own and not have your usual communities, or not just have that kind of solidarity with other fans. So no, I'm supportive of it and very sad that I'm not going to be able to attend, but John's mum is coming from Ireland and we haven't seen her in almost 2 years, and I feel like it would be a hard sell to tell her, hiya, you're just off your flight, but do you want to come down to a football club you know nothing about to shout at people? I don't think she's going to be into that, so I'm sadly trapped.
You can only ask.
Unable to go.
I mean, you can ask a question.
Maybe she'd love it. She'll be bit of a bam. She might like it.
Frankie, obviously you can't attend yourself, but you're there in spirit. What's your kind of thoughts on standing up against this board?
Yeah, I wish that I could go, but I wholeheartedly support it. And it's important now more than ever for fans to feel like we're united with a common goal. And you know, as Ruth sort of alluded to, the board, the club, they can turn a blind eye to everything that gets said online, but a big angry presence of supporters at the ground is a statement that they can't ignore. And it makes them look bad. It draws negative, unwanted attention towards them and their feelings. And the more of that we can do right now, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And big changes happen when people work in numbers to kick up a fuss. And this is a difficult situation right now, because I feel in a lot of ways last season, the support became so divided. And whenever there's like unrest like this bubbling away, you always get people saying, you know, these people don't speak for me, or like, who decided they can appoint themselves as the voices, supporters, and that sort of thing. And no one in any of this is acting as, you know, like a self-appointed spokesperson. Like, no one going to this on Sunday thinks they're speaking for anyone else. It's about our own relationships with the club and a desire to make ourselves heard in a situation where they actively don't want to hear us. So yeah, I wish I could go. My dad got a ticket. He got his first ticket out of the ballot, so he's buzzing to go. And yeah, I'm hoping he'll go and make some noise for me instead.
Lovely. Chris, this isn't just about signing players. Celtic could sign another three players between now and Sunday. This is about a board pushing too far against the fans and essentially mismanagement of the club. And we've been here before, Chris. What's your thoughts?
This is a culmination of last season and everything that's gone on. It's a culmination of their chase for Eddie Howe, them keeping Neil Lennon in a job until February, the recruitment, everything. It's built up, not just last season, but before, because, you know, that's something that you've seen in the mainstream press talking about. We're a spoiled support because of the success we've had, but you only need to point the finger to 3 years ago at the banner from the Green Brigade, which says don't sleep at the wheel, because there's been an understanding that, see, when you're in top, you need to work to stay in top. And we didn't.
Yeah,
we absolutely didn't. Our recruitment was poor. It was done in the cheap. We never supported Rodgers when he was here. The way we appointed Lennon, all this stuff has been bubbling up. COVID hit right at the worst possible moment, but now Sunday is potentially our first chance to tell them in person exactly what we think. I'll be there. 2 from 4 in the ballot.
Scum. That's right. Oh, subhuman.
I'm so
scum.
Angry at that.
Vile.
I'm not going to comment on why I came out in the ballot and yous didn't.
Scum.
But I just did. So I'll be there, obviously, before the game. I'm hoping there's a huge turnout. I've already spoken, as I'm sure Ruth and Gal and Frankie have, to people who maybe don't have a season ticket, didn't come out the ballot, but they're still going to go to this demo, because I think this is key. This is our chance to have our say. And, you know, if the club continues the way it's continuing, this will be the first of many.
First of many. Couldn't put it better myself. The fact is, I'm going to be there. I don't have a ticket. My ticket, I'm like Ruth, I'm 0 from 4 from the ballot. Fuck up, Sir Manny, all right? No manners. I'm 0 for 4 as well, but I'll be down there. The cynics are going to be there in quite big numbers to show our support for the protests, support for everyone. As Frankie says, we don't represent anyone except ourselves. We talk as individuals, as part of a collective, but as individuals, and that's why we've got a varying sort of different perspectives, but ultimately we all want change at Celtic. We need change at Celtic, and solidarity with everyone that's protesting, and let's show them. This has been fantastic. The Cynic Weekly, the original 90-minute Cynic podcast, the evolution. It's been fantastic. There will be changes moving forward in terms of what's going to be on the free feed, but I'll release a mini podcast just explaining everything. Essentially, you're going to get a taste of our subscription service, as I think you probably should, to find out what we're doing behind the paywall, and you might like it, you might want to join. But ultimately, you're going to get a podcast a week, as we do, and there'll be some weeks where you'll get more than one, because, you know, we want to just help everyone through this season, because it started off tough and it might get tougher, it might get worse, but it's like The Simpsons meme when the tie's in the hot dog rack, you know, this thing may get worse before it gets better. But hey, let's be positive. Chris Armani, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Good to be on with Ruth and Frankie. and yourself. I may add, hopefully not next week. Hopefully Louis back, but pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, asshole. Frankie Mitchell, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. It's been nice to make my weekly debut and see you all. It's been a good time.
Lovely stuff. Ruth, we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. All I have in my head is keep the heed. What is it?
Avoid the stampede.
You're both saying
like, what is it?
Keep the heed and beat the stampede.
Keep the heed.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm Chris Gallagher, and this has been The Cynic Weekly.